Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am happy to be with you here on this All Saints Sunday. It is All Saints Day when we observe All Saints Day in the church. All Saints Day is actually on November 1st, so you get Halloween on December 31st, and then All Saints Day on November 1st. And for those of us who are Lutheran, we not only get Halloween, but we get Reformation. So last Sunday for us was Reformation Sunday, when we celebrate the time that Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the church in Wittenberg and started a debate, an argument, quite a heated argument with the Pope, and ended up splitting off from the Catholic Church and forming a new church, which he did not want to be called Lutheran, but it was, and it is. But that was last Sunday, and this Sunday we observe All Saints Day, a day when we celebrate and remember the lives of the saints in our lives, those who have gone before us, those who have died, especially in the last year. But you can remember anyone in your life who has died. And for me, that is definitely the people that I remember on All Saints Day are my grandparents, and I have two aunts. Two of my father's sisters have died, and I miss them all terribly. I especially miss all of them. My grandparents, though, I miss having any living grandparents, and I am happy that I had them for as long as I did, but I, of course, always wish that I could have had them longer. My maternal grandfather, my Grandpa Harry, died first when I was in junior high school, and then my paternal grandfather, my Grandfather John, my Grandpa John, died when I was in 20, when I was in college. And then my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, Grandma Sylvia, died shortly before I left when I moved to California for the second time for my second call. And my grandmother, my last remaining grandparent, my Grandma Mary, my dad's mom, died while I was in that second call. So my grandmothers died relatively close together. And I have memories, of course, of all of them, and I could tell you a million stories. My Grandpa Harry, of course, died first, so I have fewer memories of him, but so many. He was so gruff and grumbly, and he was, I think, different with us grandkids than he was with my mom and her siblings. But he would groan if you'd give him a hug. He'd groan like you were just squeezing the stuffing out of him, and he'd act so grumpy about getting a hug. But he would always, he never turned the hugs down, and he would definitely have been upset if we hadn't given him those squeezy hugs. My favorite thing about my grandpa, though, was that this is terrible. He would, we all had to be up and dressed on Christmas morning. No pajamas in our family for opening Christmas presents. We would spend every Christmas at my mom's parents' house, and everybody had to be up and dressed before we could open presents. And so, of course, we kids were chomping at the bit to open presents. And as soon as we'd all get downstairs and get into the living room, my grandfather would stand up and go to the bathroom with a book. I don't even think he had to go to the bathroom. He just every year did it to torture us so we'd have to wait longer. And he probably wasn't in there that long, but it always felt like it was hours. And oh, why would he do that? I guess he was teaching us patience. Thanks, Grandpa Harry. And my Grandpa John was he loved his grandchildren so much. Maybe in ways that weren't always helpful for the other adults in our lives who were trying to, you know, give us rules and guidelines and boundaries. Because my Grandpa John, just, he loved us. I mean, I have a picture of me snuggling with him, and I am way too big to be sitting on my grandpa's lap. I don't even fit, and I don't care. If he was around now and I didn't think I would squash him, I would sit in his lap still and snuggle. He always had a change purse, and he would give us money. Whenever we saw him, he always was just, he would spoil us. He would give us whatever we wanted, which sounds terrible from a parenting standpoint, but oh, he loved us so much. And my dad's mom was grumpy, I guess. She loved us in a different way. And I think she loved us and she took care of us. And she just loved us in a very different way from her husband, from my Grandpa John. That was my Grandma Mary. And then there's my Grandma Sylvia, who, as I said, died right before I left for my second call. So she was alive to be at my ordination, but not alive to be at my wedding. I'm glad I got her for at least one, but I really wish all of my grandparents could have met my husband. And I think when I think about All Saints Day and my own faith, then I think of my Grandma Mary, my Grandma Sylvia the most. Because, well, first off, when she died, let me tell you that when the pastor asked us about memories and stories about our mom and our grandma, all the stories we came up with revolved around food. My grandma was Norwegian, and she loved us through food. She fed us very well and a lot. And I think if it would have been socially acceptable, she would have served us dessert for breakfast, because we got dessert at every meal. If I would go after my grandfather died, even before he died, I would go and spend a couple of weeks with them in the summer. But after he died, she would make lunch, and she would make, you know, like 4 chicken breasts and expect me to eat 3 of them because they were just going to sit in the refrigerator, and be like, "Grandma, I can't eat 3 chicken breasts. I can't even eat 2. Yeah, she just, all of our stories revolved around food. But for me, she was just a solid pillar of faith. It wasn't something that we talked about, because we are Scandinavian Lutherans, and if you're from a family like that, you probably didn't talk about your faith growing up either. It was just a given. If we went to grandma's, we knew we were going to church. We went to Christmas Eve service, and we always spent, as I said, Christmas with them. And if I went to stay with her, or we went to stay with her over a weekend, we knew it involved church. And her church was both familiar to me and sort of exotic to me, because, you know, we went there whenever we were at her house, but it was still different from my church. It was bigger than my home church, and different, you know, just differences. So it was both familiar and kind of, as I said, exotic and special. And she just modeled faith for me. When I think about a good, solid woman of faith, I think of my grandmother, and I don't mean solid in a physical way. I just mean solid in, she always attended. She was a member of the quilters group. Yeah, just very, very, very solid in my Lutheran Scandinavian grandma kind of way. And if I can emulate her even a little bit, then I think I'll be doing okay. She was always involved. She would talk about her church and her church friends, and we would go and visit. And yeah, I have very fond memories of that church, even though I haven't been there in, well, since her funeral. So 12 years now? Wow. No, not 12 years. That can't be right. No, 8 years. But still, long enough. We stopped when she got older. We stopped having Christmas at her house and started having it at our house. And we would bring her to our house for Christmas. And it just was never quite the same. I always loved the traditions that we had at her house and going to Christmas Eve service. And it always felt so late, although I think it was probably like 7 or 8 o'clock, not late at all. I miss that, and I miss her, and I miss my grandparents. I miss my aunties too. My dad has 3 sisters, sadly 2 of them have passed, One set of twins. He had one set of twins, so one half of that set of twins has died. I always think of all of them on All Saints Day, and there are many, many other people that I think of on All Saints Day. Who are the people that you think of when you think of, first off, the people that you've loved in your life who have died? But who also do you think of in terms of your life of faith? Who comes to mind as examples? I could name many, many more. I mean, I had a professor in seminary who sadly died while I was on internship, who I was in awe of him the entire time. He was just amazing and wonderful, and he gave me the most incredible gift of encouragement before I went on internship. So I hold him up as one of my saints, Dr. Robert Smith. Just amazing, and I learned so much from him, and I have so many wonderful memories of him, but so many other people. So who are those people for you? Who are the saints in your lives? We are going to take our first break of the podcast, but when we come back, we will be doing what we normally do, which is talking about the texts. And since this is the first part of the episode, we're talking about the Old Testament texts assigned for this Sunday. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
Always on the go, but the day just won't be one without your Hollywood fix. Let Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast take care of that. Jordan and Keith is Entertainment Tonight meets Access Hollywood.
I'm Jordan. The guy laughing, that's Keith.
Yeah, I'm Keith.
An all-inclusive look of pop culture.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast on this All Saints Sunday. As I mentioned before the break, we will now turn our attention to the texts assigned, the Old Testament texts assigned for this week. And the first of those Old Testament texts comes to us from the book of Isaiah, chapter 25, verses 6 through 9. Those verses are as follows. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wines, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wines strained clear. And he will destroy on this mountain the shroud that is cast over all the peoples, the sheet that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death forever. Then the Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces, and the disgrace of his people he will take away from all the earth. For the Lord has spoken. It will be said on that day, Lo, this is our God. We have waited for him so that he might save us. This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. So that again is Isaiah chapter 25, verses 6 through 9. And it's pretty easy to see why this is a sign for All Saints Sunday. We have the promises that are given. There is the... On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make a feast for all peoples, a feast of rich foods and well-aged wines. But then the Lord will also destroy the shroud that is cast over all peoples. And of course, a shroud is something that is used for bodies, for coffins, etc. So this is talking about death. The shroud that is cast over all peoples, the sheet that is spread over all nations, God will swallow up death forever. We are given the promises that God makes with us that we will be with God forever. And so then, of course, God will wipe away the tears from all faces. And this is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in the salvation that we are being offered by these promises that God makes, by the covenants that God makes with us. This is an amazing gift that we are given, and we remember not only the saints in our lives who have gone before us, but we remember the promises that have been given to us as children of God, and the promises that have been given to those saints as children of God. Whenever I do a funeral service, I always... not always, it depends on the person, but usually it's... a person who had been baptized. If if not, then I don't usually talk about this. But if it's a person who's been baptized, then I talk about the baptismal promises and the covenant that has been made with us when we are brought into the family of God as children of God through the covenant of baptism, through the sacrament of baptism, and how baptism and Christ's death and resurrection are so closely tied together, because in our baptism, we are baptized into we're baptized into a death like Christ's and a life like Christ's. And we are baptized into the promises of the resurrection, which is something that we remember on this All Saints Day when we remember the people who have gone before us. We are comforted by the fact that they have been given these same promises, that they have been given the covenant given to all of us, but given to them as well by God. Do want to look at a little bit of commentary for this text, and this commentary comes to us from Michael L. Ruffin, who is the editor of Connections, Smythe and Helwys Publishing in Macon, Georgia. And he says that, of course, All Saints Sunday is a day to remember those who have died. It is difficult to do so without remembering that we are going to die too, and that's not something that we talked about yet. I mean, maybe sort of roundaboutly, as you remember the covenant and God's promises, but it's true, you know, we face our own mortality when we think about those who have gone before us. So he says that it's about remembering those who have died. It's about facing our own mortality. All Saints Sunday, he says, offers an opportunity to proclaim the hope we have in God as we face the reality of being mortal people living in a broken and dangerous world. And he says that Isaiah 25, 6 through 9 helps us to do just that. So he says that our passage occurs within Isaiah chapters 24 through 27, which is a distinct unit within the book of Isaiah, because of its intense interest in the future and a supposed affinity with apocalyptic writings. This section is often called the Little Apocalypse of Isaiah. That's a bit of a tongue twister. The Little Apocalypse of Isaiah. More recent scholarship downplays the apocalyptic nature of these chapters, but there is no denying their interest in God's future working out of God's purposes. But in anticipating a glorious future, Isaiah 25, verses 6 through 9, acknowledges a difficult and challenging present for its original readers. Whether this passage, these three chapters as a whole, originates with Isaiah of Jerusalem or with exilic or post-exilic writers and editors, as he says seems most likely, it acknowledges that the people being addressed experience death. Of course they do, as we all do. The text may have in mind the deadly experiences of warfare and exile that Israel and Judah have encountered, but the fact that the passage addresses all peoples leads us to consider the universal experience of death. You know, and then he goes on to say that all peoples die. All nations even are subject to death. This is not an experience that anyone can evade or escape. So he then changes perspectives from what is to what will be, and says that this passage further develops a theme that's first addressed in Isaiah 2:1. In the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Now we read that God is going to bring about the promised wonderful future on this mountain, which is Mount Zion, and the glorious future will include not only Israel, but all nations. This future will feature a communal celebration, and God will provide a bountiful feast that all nations will gather together to enjoy. The divisions and conflicts that take away so much joy from life will be gone as all nations fellowship with each other and with God. God's great future will include full provision and complete community, and this future will also feature life without death. Isn't that amazing? This feast that we're being shown, this future promise, a life without death, when all people are brought together, when all are as one, and that is not something that we experience in the world today, right? We are not as one. We have conflicts with our neighbors, with our family, with other people, with other countries. There's so much conflict in the world, and yet we are given this promise that one day this feast will happen. God's kingdom will be reality. Right now we just have this vision of God's kingdom, and it's a beautiful, wonderful vision. And sometimes we see that vision, the inbreaking of God's kingdom in our world. Sometimes we ourselves can affect some of that vision in the world around us. But we have that to look forward to give us hope, to give us hope that not only those who have gone before us are at that feast, but that we will be at that feast, that we have been given these promises, and we have that future to look forward to. So you get this really beautiful picture, and maybe you've seen artwork that depicts this heavenly feast. One of my favorites is from John August Swanson, and it depicts not only people at the feast, but animals of all kinds. And he uses such beautiful, brilliant colors. There's so much movement in his paintings, and there's just so much going on in this artwork of this feast, where not only all peoples and all nations, but all of God's creatures are brought together for this amazing feast. And that gives me hope, even though the world around me sometimes makes me not so hopeful. Time to take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll be finishing up by looking at the psalm assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we were talking about the first Old Testament text assigned for this week, which came from Isaiah, and now we'll be moving on to the psalm assigned for this All Saints Sunday. That psalm this week, comes to us from Psalm 24, the psalm in its entirety, and those verses are as follows. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. For he has founded it on the seas and established it on the rivers. Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? Those who have clean hands and pure hearts, who do not lift up their souls to what is false, and who do not swear deceitfully. They will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from the God of their salvation. Such is the company of those who seek him, who seek the face of the God of Jacob. Lift up your head, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord of hosts, he is the King of glory. That is Psalm 24. And we definitely need to unpack that a little bit, I think. We have the first part, the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. that's pretty easy to understand. For God has founded it on the seas and established on the rivers. God, of course, has created the world and all that is in it. And so the earth is God's. All that is in the earth, on the earth, is God's. The world and those who live in it. And then it asks this question of who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? And then it moves on into some other directions. So I do want to look at some commentary because, yeah, this psalm is not quite as clear-cut as maybe we would like it to be. So the commentator for this section is Mark Throntfight, who is the Elva B. Lovell Professor of Old Testament at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he says, Psalm 24 is notoriously difficult to interpret. Thank you, Professor Throntfight, because I was feeling very dumb when I read through this, thinking, I don't know what's going on here. So while virtually everyone sees that it falls into three parts, which are verses 1 and 2, verses 3 through 6, and verses 7 through 10, their disparate nature renders most attempts to explain their interrelationship conjectural at best and speculative at worst. He says, oh well, here goes. I do appreciate a sense of humor in a commentary. I hope you do as well. He says, by far the most common approach to Psalm 24 sees it as a liturgy that sketches the return of the Ark of the Lord. This return may be identified with an actual battle. David's bringing the Ark to Jerusalem, which you can read about in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verses 13 through 19, or 1 Chronicles chapter 15. 25 through 16, verse 3. It could be Solomon's completion of the temple constructed, found in 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles 5. It could be part of the pre-exilic Feast of Tabernacles or the post-exilic Babylonian Akedah festival marking the advent of the new year. Since Israel did bring the Ark into battle and enjoyed military success as a result, one assumes it would also have been brought back and that its return would likely have been celebrated. Remember, this is the Ark of the Covenant, not the one in Indiana Jones. But, creation and divine kingship are constitutive of other ancient Near Eastern processionals, and these are clearly present in verses 1 through 2 and 7 through 10. The holy mountain and the sanctuary appear in verse 3. Verse 6 uses vocabulary found in pilgrimage texts. Verses 7 through 10 mention God's glory 5 times, and many passages locate God's glory in the Holy of Holies in the Jerusalem temple or in the tabernacle that preceded it. In addition, each of these three sections is assigned its own setting. Verses 1 through 2 as pilgrims approach Jerusalem, verses 3 through 6 at the city's gates, and verses 7 through 10 at the actual ceremony. So you're getting some idea, a little bit more of a picture as to what's going on here. Maybe if you can break it down a little bit, look at those sections from those contexts of the setting as pilgrims, pilgrims who then have arrived at the city's gates, and then the actual ceremony or liturgy or celebration itself. So he says, obviously, much of this reconstruction is conjectural, presuming a number of rituals and ceremonies of which we have no record, especially verses 3 through 6, usually construed as a test for admission to the temple. But the qualities addressed by this test are moral, while admittance to the temple was denied only for physical reasons. Recent work on the psalm, he says, provides a measure of encouragement for this reading. First of all, there is a growing consensus that Psalm 24 is an entrance liturgy due to its placement in a series of psalms displaying a concentric structure. Second, he says, investigation into the religious culture of the ancient Near East has provided several examples in which statues or idols were led out of a temple only to be returned to the temple later in what may be described as cultic parades. So if the Ark can be construed as representing God's presence without breaking the force of the First Commandment's prohibition against idols or graven images, we have a backdrop for the obscure mini-literature. Liturgy. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, anyway, verses 1 through 2 celebrate God as creator of all, of course. Verses 3 through 6 make clear that only those who seek God can enter the temple, as indicated by the hill of the Lord and his holy place. But this seeking is a matter of the will. Heart refers to what we would call the mind. So matters of the heart in Hebrew have nothing to do with the will. Have to do with the will, not feelings or emotions. So similarly, the adjectives pure and clean that belong to the sphere of ritual in our way of thinking in the psalmist's culture are matters of morality and suggest that the proper qualifications would be concerned with integrity and honor. Those who gain admittance are showered with blessing, vindication, and salvation. And then verses 7 through 10 depict God's parallel entry. Into this presence of God as creator and redeemer, the worshiper enters and receives the blessing, vindication, and salvation that he seeks. So, yeah, he says in this context of all saints, the text provides or proclaims the victory of God, not least the victory over evil and death that is ours in Christ Jesus. So as we await his triumphal return, we can take heart that our loved ones lie safely in his care. And I think that last part is the most helpful, at least for me, in describing this text. So you can look at this text from a liturgical standpoint. It's, you know, often when you read Psalms, they're the easiest to understand of the texts that we read. Not this week. This week, it's, I don't want to say convoluted, that's not quite the right word, but definitely difficult to wade through and get to that. But I appreciate the description of liturgy and trying to put it in more of a context. And then, but that victory of God at the end, you know, the worshiper, the pilgrim, after doing the pilgrimage and reaching the place of God's dwelling and gaining admittance by passing, you know, by passing the test, whatever that may be, then it receives the blessing, the vindication and salvation. That is the victory of God and makes sense in the context of all saints. I think we're going to wrap things up for this episode. I want to thank you for joining me. I hope that you take some time today and this week to think about the saints in your life. Think about those loved ones who have gone before, and also think about the saints in faith. Who are the people, even people you didn't know, saints who have inspired you in your lives of faith? Who are those people and how did they inspire you? Hope you'll join me again on Wednesday when we will be looking at the second set of texts, the New Testament texts assigned for this week. In the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your weekend and an amazing beginning to your week. In the meantime, please do remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.